Marshall, go ahead and call the next case, please.
Now calling A230561, EP Land LLC et al. Appellants versus City of Eden Prairie Respondent.
Good morning, and welcome to the Court of Appeals. This is our fourth case on the calendar this morning set for oral argument. I am Judge Wheelock. I'm sitting with Judges Bratvold and Smith. As you're probably aware, you get 15 minutes for your principal argument each, and appellant will also get a 5 minutes for rebuttal. So feel free to move the podium up and down. There's a lever on the front corner if that would be helpful. And we do record our oral arguments. They are available on the Minnesota Judicial Branch's website within about 24 hours. So when you begin, please state your name clearly, identify the client that you represent, and let us know if there's any information about pronunciations or pronouns that we need to be aware of. And with that, counsel, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Brian Huntington, attorney for the appellants, EP Land LLC and Auto Care World. This case broadly presents two issues. Number one, may a city lawfully reject a project seeking plan unit development, or PUD, waivers because the city believed that the property's permitted uses were no longer appropriate? And number two, does a city cause a regulatory taking when it rejects a project because of its permitted uses and then modifies its zoning code for the specific purpose of preventing development consistent with that permitted use? With respect to the first question, numerous Minnesota authorities hold that a city acts unlawfully when it rejects a project because it opposed development consistent with a permitted use. With respect to the second question, when a city denies a project because of its permitted uses and deprives the landowner of its reasonable expectation of development consistent with that use, that is a regulatory taking. The evidence that the city acted here based upon opposition to the gas convenience.
Before you, for that first one, before you leave there, what is the case law you would cite where there is a PUD in existence and the courts have held that it's a violation to deny based on a permitted use?
The case law regarding PUDs is admittedly sparse. Okay. The PTL case involved a preliminary plat application. The other cases we cite involve CUP applications, and they talk about the fact that PTL says definitionally, when your project conforms with the zoning code and conforms with the zoning, that is compliance with the comprehensive plan. You can't reject it. In this case, the project complied but for those waivers. But for the specific waivers that we're talking about in this case, the project was in compliance. So the question becomes, all right, number one, if you have manifest evidence that there was a denial based upon the permitted use, is that illegal? Was that an illegitimate purpose? We say yes. Then the second question is, all right, was there a specific rational basis supported by substantial evidence that that they had legitimate reasons to reject the waivers? This case wasn't about the waivers, Your Honors. We deposed members of the City Council. They didn't even know what the waivers were. The district court judge dedicated two paragraphs, actually, the district court summary judgment ruling doesn't talk about the waivers at all. Nowhere does he talk about a rational basis for the waivers. Instead, he talks about inconsistency with the comprehensive plan. If you've got a permitted use, you can't do that. The important point about...
It's your argument. I mean, I see this, and maybe I'm wrong, but the principal argument that we start with, or the main issue of dispute, is whether a PUD can actually restrict permitted uses, right?
On that question...
And that's a question of interpretation of the ordinances. Is that accurate?
That's true. I would point out, Your Honors, no one before this litigation ever took the position that the PUD adoption limited the permitted uses. Nobody. No evidence in the record of that. You've got a long-standing historical precedent of the city interpreting its ordinances in a given way. And I do have a citation for you on that. There was a decision of the Minnesota Supreme Court, Amcon Corporation versus City of Eagan, 348 NW2D 66, 1984. That case was similar to this one, Supplemental Zoning District. District Court's order on summary judgment never even mentions that this is a supplemental district. That's very important. It's an overlay district. It doesn't replace the underlying zoning. Under the city code, it says the permitted uses are going to be permitted uses in that supplemental district. And it says you shall not waive them. It does say you can restrict or modify as to the PUD. And that is the point, a critical point. A PUD is project specific. In other words, the city agrees to certain waivers, and they'll agree that as to those waivers, that is the use that you would have. So for example, in this case, city grants the PUDs that we're asking for gas convenience and the auto element. We can't, after the fact, then change the use and still develop pursuant to that PUD. Can we continue to develop consistent with the permitted uses so long as it's conforming with the preliminary plat? Yes, absolutely. Because it doesn't restrict, you can't waive, even under the city's code, you can't waive the permitted uses. Those remain. As a matter of constitutional law, that's true also. You cannot, and we've said this at every stage of the proceeding, the Lucas decision says, a property has no economic value if it has no permitted uses. You look at what are the permitted uses, and you gotta have one.
How does, in your view, if at all, the 2007 PUD factor into your understanding of this case?
Well, it factors in to the extent that the city granted waivers. So there's a long pattern of the city granting waivers. But to be very clear, the landowner's addendum says you don't have to develop consistent with this PUD. You can continue to develop pursuant to the other regulatory standards that would apply. We quote the full language in our brief. So the point is, if you want to develop this project, you have to follow this. But I would note, Your Honor, okay, that 2007 PUD, what does it say about the outlot? We have two properties here. What does it say about the outlot? It says, we're not granting you anything. You have to come back through the process again. It didn't give us anything. With respect to that outlot, we're right back to square one. It talked about a use on what I'll call the corner parcel. But if you look at it's called site plan conceptual. What does it say? It says future building. And in our addendum, you can see the site plan. It doesn't say what use it even has to be. It doesn't identify a use on the plans. It just says a future building. A future building, which, by the way, is a lot larger than the auto use that we were proposing in this case. So no, consistent with the long-standing historical application of the PUD district, that did not waive the permitted uses. Though I do think it's relevant that for over 20 years, the city has approved a variety of PUDs and approved waivers for this specific area on the intersection.
Would you, in your understanding of how the ordinances operate, if your client had proposed gas station and auto repair, which you say are permitted uses in NCOM zoning, right, and had not asked for any waivers at all, mm-hmm. would you have to have had filed a PUD application or?
No.
No, you would have just requested, it's because of the waivers in your argument that you were asking for a PUD.
Well, it's not just me, Your Honor. Their city planner said that at the Planning Commission meeting. Their city planner, in response to a question from one of the Planning Commission members, said, yeah, if they weren't asking for the waivers, they'd have to come through and get a preliminary plat and a site plan. But that's it.
So then we're left, I think, again, with the central question of whether, I think, the 2007 PUD could and did restrict permitted uses. You're saying both it can't and it didn't?
Well, I'm saying correct. As a matter of the ordinance, it didn't. As a matter of constitutional law, if it did, there's been a regulatory taking in this case, and the court should grant.
Well, 2007 is before you purchased it. I mean, I'm looking at the 2007 PUD, right?
Yes.
Whether it could and did restrict permitted uses. That's
sure.
Before your client entered into the picture, right?
That's true.
Okay.
But no one before this litigation ever said the PUD limited the permitted uses.
So if
all
you look
along.
At the PUD, I think in a briefing it talks about the 2007 PUD, I think, refers to the uses being, I might get this a little wrong, I didn't look at it again, but a coffee shop and a retail building or something. The implication I understood from the briefing, and again, we'll hear from the other side and I might be wrong, is that those are the uses that are now permitted, notwithstanding ANCOM's greater universe of permitted uses.
Well, A, retail building, I look at the development agreement and the plans, I don't see that reference. I don't think that's in there.
The plans, you're referring to 2007 plans?
Right,
okay.
Which are included in our addendum. I don't see that reference in there. It says future building, and it has 16,000 square feet or something like that. But B, again, they didn't actually approve it. They said you'd have to come back. And according
to that developer.
We'd have to come back with a brand new PUD concept.
No, who had to come back? The track?
Oh, the landowner.
Back then.
Well, according to them, even today, their position is, hey, that development agreement continues to restrict the permitted uses, which, by the way, we didn't sign that development agreement. We're not assignees of that development agreement. But nevertheless, if that development agreement somehow continues to bind our permitted uses under that owner's addendum, or under the actual language of the development agreement, it says, as to that outlot, you've got to come back for all new approvals. So no, they didn't approve anything for that outlot. Okay, I want to point out, this is not a case about circumstantial evidence. This is a case about direct evidence of bad faith targeting. We have correspondence from the mayor identifying the landowner by name, saying, within days of denying the project, where are we at with amending the ENCOM zoning district? We'd better act quickly before he markets the land.
And
that's in the addendum.
Explain to me how bad faith fits into the arguments about whether it's legally permitted and a taking.
Well, it certainly applies to, number one, did they reject the project because of the permitted uses? And number two, was there a regulatory taking? Again, Your Honors, the question about did it take away the permitted uses? While that was certainly the city's primary defense below, number one, under the plain language of the ordinance, it's clear and unambiguous. It did not. Number two.
Which ordinance?
The city's PUD ordinance, section 11.40. It says,
I see. Like
elsewhere it says
70.
Supplemental. Mm-hmm. Then it says you shall not waive them. You might limit them for a specific PUD. But again, we're not going back to that 2007 PUD. We got a new PUD here. This is new. In the Johnson case, Minnesota Supreme Court says evidence of bad faith targeting is relevant to a takings claim. The nature of the government action is, of course, relevant to Penn Central third element. We have direct evidence. We have the mayor saying before the project is considered, highly unlikely this project is ever going to get through unless it squeezes through under the zoning. A few days after it's denied, where are we at with amending the zoning district to make sure that that property can't develop? Mentioning the landowner here. Your Honors, the issue about permitted uses, if it wasn't a permitted use, why did they amend the neighborhood commercial zoning district? It doesn't make any sense. That was the whole point of them doing that. They knew they were permitted uses. They didn't want gas convenience on that corner. And so they immediately rushed to amend the zoning district. And by the way, it doesn't impact a single other property owner. The city below could not identify a single other neighborhood commercial property that was undeveloped, number one. Number two, when they passed the zoning district amendment, you know, usually properties would just be made lawful nonconforming uses. Existing gas stations would be made lawful nonconforming uses. So you can maintain them, you can't expand, you can't improve. That's not what the city did here. City passes an amendment to NCOM and says, all current gas stations shall remain permitted uses for all purposes.
And what is that, what's the implication of that to you?
It means
I understand what it means, but
right.
How does that advance your claims?
Okay, they're saying convenience gas is inconsistent with neighborhood commercial, and then they're gonna allow all existing convenience gas to expand. That is diametrically inconsistent.
It's the expansion versus the non-conforming.
Yeah. Let's say we're gonna continue to say it's legitimate for all of you. You can continue to have neighborhood commercial. But you, landowner, no, not you. That's what this was all about. If you listen to Planning Commission proceedings, it's incredibly obvious. It was designed to stop this specific landowner.
Thank you, Council.
So thank you.
Time has expired. We'll turn to Council for respondent. 15 minutes are on the clock. Feel free to adjust the podium and remember to introduce yourself. You may begin when you are ready.
One moment.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Catherine Swenson of Green Espa Law Firm. With me today at council table is my law partner, Nicholas Shiner. Also with us today is John Baker and other of our partners in the gallery. We represent the respondent, the City of Eden Prairie. We ask the court to affirm summary judgment. In 2007, years before appellants acquired any interest in the property, the City Council passed an ordinance that changed the property zoning to PUD, or Planned Unit Development. Under that 2007 PUD zoning, the development agreement, and the site plans that were also approved, the property owner can build a coffee shop and a future retail building. This was all a matter of public record, and the principal of appellant EP Land LLC testified that he had seen the recorded development agreement before he purchased the property. That document clearly references the existence of the PUD.
So there's an ordinance passed following that PUD. I think what I heard from opposing counsel is, hey, that's someone else's agreement. That doesn't bind us.
No, I would encourage the panel, or invite the panel, rather, to look at the approvals that actually constitute the controlling zoning for this property. There's several documents. The first is a PUD ordinance. That's an ordinance, legislation passed by the City Council. You can find that at appellant's addendum, page 55.
And that's passed when?
That is passed in 2007.
Okay.
It provides that the property shall be subject to the terms and conditions of a contemporaneous development agreement, and it incorporates it by reference. It's a matter of law.
So is that what then sets, in your view, the law that applies to that property at the time this PUD application is made?
Yes, the 2007 PUD is the controlling zoning. It has not been repealed, amended, or rescinded since it was put into place by the City Council. The other relevant approvals are the development agreement, which is something that is approved by the City Council. It's an agreement between the council and the landowner at the time. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but it is in the record. That's document 119. I'm sorry, the development agreement is an appellant's addendum at page 32. The development agreement states that the property shall be developed in conformance with an approved plan set. Document 119 is an additional resolution of the City Council that is the site plan approval. Also at document 119 are the approved site plans. So that's all in the record, and I'm happy to talk about that in greater detail.
So can you tell me the 2007 lay of the land, as I understand the city's argument, is it's only those uses that are actually proposed by and then agreed to by the city in 2007 that are permissible from then on?
That's correct.
That are allowable.
Yes,
they're permitted. And so that's just sort of by negative implication, because it didn't include other permitted uses under NCOM, that means that they are not? How does that work?
I think what we need to do is we need to look at the city code, because I think it's unambiguous how this works. The city code says a zoning district is supplemental, and it says it directs the reader to look at the other provisions of the chapter. It says it is supplementary in accordance with the provisions of this chapter. That's subdivision 3. We reprinted section 11.40 in respondents' addendum. So that's where we can. So subdivision 3 directs us to look at the other provisions. The most important provision here today is subdivision 7. That's permitted uses. And subdivision 7 says that the permitted uses that are available in the underlying zoning district. Here we have an underlying zoning district that is neighborhood commercial. There's a list of permitted uses for that. And this subdivision 7 says that list is available, but it says, this is what it says, except as such use or uses may be limited by a development plan, an agreement, or imposed by the city as a condition to approval of the PUD. And that is exactly what happened here. So subdivision,
yes. Which of those three in that list, which are... Mm-hmm. An odd list, not very parallel. Which of those three applies?
Two of them, the development agreement, which is the agreement by the city council with the landowner at the time, and then it's also imposed by the city as a condition to approval of the PUD, so it's built into the PUD ordinance, which is the PUD zoning. So how that works is subdivision 8, they can be read together, subdivision 7 on permitted uses and subdivision 8. What subdivision 8 does is it says when we're talking about a PUD, the landowner who applies for a PUD is not allowed to do an end run around the list of permitted uses. You're stuck with that list of permitted uses when you design your PUD. For example, no one could say, I want to do a PUD that has a nuclear power plant, because that's never on any list of permitted uses.
And is it fair to say that any subsequent owner is also bound by not only the zoning ordinance, but also the PUD that was approved until such time as a new PUD is implemented?
Or until the council otherwise rezones it. There needs to be legislation from the city council that would undo the PUD or alter it, and that was what was being asked for here, is in asking for a new PUD, they would have solved both of the problems that they had to what they wanted to do. The first is that the current PUD in 2007 restricts the available uses. They're on the list, but you know they were narrowed down to the coffee shop and the future retail building. So the number one problem that they had was we are restricted to these particular uses. If we want to do something else for that property, we need to get rid of the current zoning. So they applied for a PUD to get it rezoned. The second problem is the problem of waivers. Even if there was no PUD here, they would still need to have some waiver from the other provisions of the city code, such as the parking setbacks. So what applying for a PUD would have done had they been successful, it would have eliminated both of those barriers to doing what they wanted to do. But yes, they would have needed city council legislation to rezone the property.
So let's leave waivers aside and just focus on the permitted uses. If the landowner came in, just do you agree that if the landowner had come in seeking to do a coffee shop with no waivers, a PUD application wouldn't have been required? I mean, they would be entitled to do that.
So long as it aligned with the coffee shop that was approved. It was, you know, on the plans, it's in a particular spot on the property, it's this particular amount of square footage. The way a PUD operates is that the council is allowing the landowner to do something that isn't strictly permitted by the city code. For example, there's a setback or a waiver or something, and the council is okay with deviating from the provisions of the code strictly because the landowner is promising to do something very, very specific. The council knows exactly what it is going to get, and so they are rezoning in a way that does not comply with all aspects of the city code.
So if you came in, the council doesn't have the ability on a new current application for a PUD to say, given the 2007 one, someone comes in and says, I want to do a coffee shop, and they decide that coffee shops actually have become wild. I don't know. They're somehow inconsistent with the neighborhood. They can't now take away a coffee shop if a coffee shop was in the previous PUD.
I'm afraid I'm not. The current, so under the 2007 PUD, the coffee shop as designated in the approved site plans from the city council, that is a lawful use for the property, and you could do that as a matter of right.
So, right, you could do it as a matter of
yes.
Right. It can't be taken away now on an
No, you could go in for your building permit as long as you didn't need any other waivers or variances or anything like that. There are lawful uses for the property, and that's the situation that we're in.
And the second lawful use besides the coffee shop is what in the 2000s?
It's a future retail building. There is a footprint on one of the site plans, and there is a reference to, you know, it doesn't say what exactly the retail use would be, but I think if an applicant came in and said, we want to do a retail use, and it fits within the footprint and the, you know, the square footage, and it fits within the plans that were approved, I think the city would be very hard-pressed to say, well, you can't do a future retail use here. There are two uses that are approved here. It's the coffee shop and the future retail building.
And can you speak to the comments that were made regarding the two different properties that, is it the outlaw? I'm sorry if I've lost the vocabulary around that. It didn't address all of it and actually required to, people, owner to come back in the future and at the implications of
I think
that.
It would be for the, so there was not, for example, the plan, so that it's kind of just an out, it's a preliminary site plan for that future retail use because we didn't know, they don't know the nature of whatever retail would go in. There might be different plumbing. There would be an electrical plan that would need to be submitted, but as long as it complied with what was approved and fit, you know, within that box, it's retail. You're not seeking to build a builder, a bigger building or something, you know, in a different orientation on the property. That would be approved. They wouldn't need, you know, additional approvals, like for another PUD for that. So I think we've addressed that the 2007 PUD is the controlling use for the property. And before I transition to the claims about the denial resolution and the takings, I did want to say something about, there was a question posed to my friend on the other side about, you know, before the litigation, was there anything to indicate that the controlling zoning for the property was the 2007 PUD, you know, apart from all of the approvals that were a matter of public record. There is evidence in the record. Their own attorney, Mr. Coyle, acknowledged in writing that the controlling zoning for the property was the 2007 PUD. That was before the litigation in an email exchange with then-city planner Julie Klima. She's now the community development director. That's document 120 in the record, and we discussed that on pages 13 and 14 of our brief.
Council, as you move forward to talk about denial of the request for the PUD and the passing of the amendments to the ordinance, can you speak to whether the bad faith argument that the other side has alleged, how that impacts our analysis of those issues?
The short answer is that bad faith has no effect on either the denial of resolution claim or the takings claim. Bad faith does not play into rational basis. What we do is we look at two things. One is, are the reasons, is there even one reason that the city council gave? Is it legally available? And the second thing is it supported by substantial evidence in the record? Bad faith motivations, unstated reasons, simply do not come into play, and that would affect both for the denial resolution or for that later amendment that altered the permitted uses for NCOM, because they are both legislation and subject to rational review.
And that's partly because you're saying it's rational basis and not arbitrary and capricious, which was in some of the briefing.
The standard that we say apply is the standard from the Minnesota Supreme Court in Hahn versus City of Coon Rapids. And so the two questions for the court are, one, is there at least one reason that's legally sufficient? And two, does that reason have support in the record? So it is rational basis, Your Honor. Regarding bad faith and the takings, the one case that I believe they have cited to is the Johnson case involving the City of Minneapolis. Johnson was specifically limited by the Minnesota Supreme Court to the facts of that case, and they are absolutely not what we have here. In Johnson, the City of Minneapolis, there was evidence that the city was attempting to drive down the value of a particular property so that the city could acquire it. And there is simply no evidence here that the City of Eden Prairie has been doing anything to attempt to acquire this property. And furthermore, with regard to that, the NCOM amendment, there is a rational basis for that. It does make sense. It impacts future redevelopment. If somebody had a property that was zoned to NCOM and, you know, their business wasn't doing well and they got a better offer from a gas company, this amendment would prevent a site from being redeveloped to include a gas station. So it doesn't solely affect the property that we're talking about here today. With regard to rational basis review, it is extremely deferential to municipal zoning decisions. It doesn't matter, again, if there is some sort of hidden motive or that the city is discriminating against gas stations. And it doesn't matter if the decision was debatable or the court might have come to a different decision. And I believe in the briefing we've argued that they have forfeited the legal argument about the rational basis, whether something is supported factually in the record. But even if the court wishes just to go past that, the city concluded that the proposed development is in conflict with the comprehensive plan. That is one of the four criteria for PUD approval in the city code. And appellant's argument on this point, they said there are a lot of, I believe, Judge Smith, you had asked, is there a case where a city council was not allowed to deny a PUD because of the permitted use in the underlying zoning district? I am not aware of such a case. All of the cases that appellants have cited to support their argument do not deal with PUDs. Those are the cases at pages 34 and 38 of their principal brief and in their reply at 8 and 9. Those cases involve permit applications like building permits and plat applications. None of those cases involved a rezoning request like the PUD application here. Cities have far more discretion when it comes to rezoning decisions, including PUDs, than they do when deciding applications for building permits and plats. And the case law that we cite, we've cited at least two cases that hold that a city can, as a matter of law, deny a PUD application where the proposed PUD conflicts with the comprehensive plan. That's on our brief, pages 32 and 33. That's the City of Wayzata case from this court in 2016 and Fisher versus City of Chanhassen in 1997.
Council, can you speak to whether the third factor of the Wensman test, which looks at the nature of the government's action and how it impacts the property at issue, you take the position in the briefing that this actually should be decided in your favor.
Yes.
It's pretty clear that the denial of the PUD and the amending of the ordinance impact this specific property. So tell me why we should find in your favor on that factor.
I see I have five seconds. Well, thank you, Your Honor. As for the third factor, the Minnesota Supreme Court said in Wensman that the concern with this factor is whether a private landowner is being forced to satisfy a need of the public at large by way of the government action. In Wensman, the property owner was being forced to maintain an extremely narrow land use category. So I think the only thing the property owner could do with the property was continue to run a non-profitable golf course or perhaps do some sort of RV park. And so that is not what we have here. Here, after the city's denial of the application and the zoning amendment, the status quo is that the property is guided commercial. It's zoned PUD, and we have those 2007 approvals that remained valid. The city denied this particular application, but did not, for example, forbid all commercial use of the property so that the public can instead enjoy the use of the property. It is anticipated by the guiding that this property will be developed commercially, and there are many references to the record to that effect. And with regard to the NCOM amendment, the Wensman factor also weighs in the city's favor because that amendment has no effect on the 2007 PUD approvals. And I see my time has expired. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And we will turn back to counsel for appellant. We will have 5 minutes on the clock. Once we have that set, feel free to adjust the podium and you can start when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. Again, what do they cite to as evidence that the permitted uses were waived? A provision that says you shall develop the property this way. Never says permitted uses are waived. Development agreement, Exhibit D, Bluff Country Village, Second Edition. I'm going to quote it here. Neither the owner or transferee are required to develop the property in accordance with this agreement, so long as owner or transferee obtain such approvals as are required by city code to develop the property in a manner other than as set forth in this agreement. They've got nothing showing waiver. They cannot cite to you any specific evidence saying we waived all these NCOM permitted uses. And look at the ordinances. They kept saying NCOM. All along they said NCOM. You asked me, Your Honor, Judge Smith, you asked me about PUD, permitted uses, and the relationship of PUD. There is a case where the Minnesota Supreme Court invalidated a rezoning because it interfered with a permitted use, and that is Alexander versus City of Minneapolis. And it's simply not true that the only case which talks about bad faith was Johnson. Three or four of our cases say there is really strong evidence here and they're acting because of those permitted uses. And we're going to take that into account. And in that Alexander case, as I recall, the city put in a stop order, completely illegal, and then rezoned the property so they couldn't develop that way. Sounds pretty similar to this case. Minnesota Supreme Court said that rezoning, that legislative act, is invalid. Struck it down. Ordered development consistent with the permitted uses. The argument about we need this anti-waiver language to develop, to prevent development of a nuclear power plant, Your Honors, that's absurd. That's totally absurd. The comprehensive plan, you can't have development in conflict with the comprehensive plan. So you're going to look at what is its guiding under the comprehensive plan. Our guiding is commercial. Our guiding is commercial. So you can't add permitted uses that are not in the underlying zoning district. That's not the point of a PUD. The point of a PUD is to waive existing city ordinances.
So as I understand it, we have the zoning, right? The property is within a specific zone area that allows the permitted uses. And the PUD is an overlay on top of that that has additional restrictions on it. Is that incorrect? Is that understanding wrong?
That is incorrect.
Okay, explain to me why.
With respect, Your Honor, that's exactly the opposite of what a PUD is designed to do. A PUD is designed to add flexibility, and it's designed to allow a city to grant waivers that do not require you to show the variance criteria. And
do you think a PUD could add a permitted use?
No.
No.
Absolutely
okay.
not. So and in fact, I'm going to refer you back to that AmCorp decision mm-hmm. I talked about earlier. There, they said, city, you have to rezone the property because we're not going to allow a conflict between the uses in the underlying zoning district and a PUD. Even under the city's ordinance, you look at what are the uses in the underlying PUD. Then you can waive a variety of requirements, but you cannot waive the permitted uses in the underlying PUD.
So I'm looking at, you know, section 11.40 in the of the city's code, and I see zoning district supplement as subdivision 3. The PUD is supplementary to a zoning district, and you know I understand supplementary to mean that it, in addition to, right? It's creating more than what was there before. Where in the language of the ordinance, if you could point me to it, says that you are not allowed to use a PUD to restrict the permitted uses that are allowed in the zoning?
The criteria that the city has for PUD, it has four different criteria for when they can grant a PUD. Mm-hmm. Criteria number one is does not conflict with the comprehensive plan. So you can't grant uses that would conflict with the comprehensive plan, i.e., how is the property guided? And again, our property is guided.
But you could reduce the number of permitted uses, right?
On a project-specific basis, yes, but not the underlying zoning district. That stays, and you can continue to develop commensurate with that if you choose not to develop consistent with that PUD.
May I follow up on that? I'm not sure
Please
I
do.
Understood on a project. On a project basis, I thought your argument is all permitted uses are available, notwithstanding there being a PUD.
So, Your Honor, earlier I mentioned if they granted the PUD we were asking for, the gas and the auto, could we then say, you know what, we're actually going to do a totally different use, but we're still going to use those waivers? Okay, no. At that point, you either got to get a new PUD.
Waivers of other issues, like setbacks and this and that.
Right.
Okay.
You can't use the waivers that they've granted for a totally unrelated use.
Understood.
So, Your Honor, our requests are as follows here. Number one, preferred remedy is order the city to grant the applications. Number two, we ask that you grant the mandamus relief requested and order them to commence eminent domain proceedings. And number three, we ask you to strike down that NCOM ordinance amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Thank you to all of the Council here for your argument today and for the briefing, very thorough briefing on this issue. We appreciate it. We will take it under advisement. The case is submitted, and we will issue an opinion within the 90-day statutory requirement. And with that, that ends the oral argument portion of our calendar today, and the court is in recess. Thank you.
All rise.